Well, this book is came about quite by accident. It is a compendium of love letters, or I guess starting off just letters, from a soldier who was going off to war in 1942 and decided to ask a girl for whom he'd had a secret infatuation back in the country in Pope County to see whether she would correspond with him. They'd never had a date or had very little contact with each other, maybe four or five times. And that exchange of letters occurred during the next 3.5 years while he was in training and at war in Europe during the European campaign of World War II. And of course, immediately after the war, 2 weeks after he came home in the September of 1945, or October, I guess it was 1945, they were married, and Leland died in 2006, and last year his widow Letty moved from Crow Mountain, which is a long mountain chain alongside Interstate 40 near Russellville, moved down to a retirement home in Russellville, and her daughter discovered these letters in an old rotting box in the garage and brought them to her and. And that's how the book came about. Last spring, a woman who lived across the hall at the Wildflower Retirement Center from Letty Duval heard her talking about these letters she was reading, and so she asked to read a few of them, and Letty consented, and it was her idea that these were a book, should be made into a book, and Letty protested, no, Leland would never want people reading his letters, but they agreed that they should consult me about it. And of course, I went up and looked at the letters, some of them, and told her I thought indeed that there was a superb book there, and kind of arrested her fears about Leland. And she finally consented, and the University of Arkansas Press agreed to publish the book, and that's how it came about.
Did you know Leland?
Yes, I did. I knew him very well. We both worked at the Arkansas Gazette. We overlapped about 31 years, I guess. Leland went to work there in about 1955, and I came along 5 years later in 1960. And then the last 10 years before the Gazette closed in 1991, he and I worked together on the editorial page. We were both editorial writers for the Gazette.
Now, as a friend and a colleague, did you ever happen to discuss his time at the war with Leland?
Yes. At about 1998 or 1999, I was helping with a project of the University of Arkansas Oral History Division, and we were doing an oral history of the Arkansas Gazette, and in the course of it, we interviewed, four or five of us interviewed, 150 former employees of the Gazette, mainly writers and editors. And those are all, those interviews are all taped and are online, can be read at the University of Arkansas World History Project. And one of those was Leland. And so it was basically a discussion of his life, a long interview. I guess it constitutes maybe 100 or so pages, just a discussion of his life, mainly his newspaper career. But I did get him to talk a little bit about his experiences in World War II, and it was at that time that he talked a little bit about Letty. He described some of his experiences in those interviews back in 1998 or 1999, and in addition to his description of war in the letters, we do a little bit more of some of his more harrowing experiences during the war.
How did that knowledge, the knowledge of knowing Leland, help you with editing this book?
I think it heightened my enjoyment of working on it because I did know Leland very well and admired him so much, and so it was a great pleasure to edit him. And editing was actually a very easy job. All I did basically was cut them down, because when I typed all the we copied all the letters, which were generally written out in pencil or ink on all kinds of pieces of paper, scrap paper, sacks, wrapping paper, stationery, whatever he could get his hands on, and we copied them. And I spent last fall typing them all in to the computer, and they came to 160,000 words. And Larry Malley, the University of Arkansas Press, said, "We can't publish a book of that magnitude. We don't think we could sell it. It would be too long." And he asked if I could cut the letters down to about 100,000 words. So that's basically what the editing that was required, a little of the kind of editing that you normally expect, going line by line and changing words and improving the sentence structure or grammar or whatever. None of that happened. I didn't really change a word of his. But I did cut out about 55,000 words, most of it just eliminating letters that I said, well, this is not as interesting as some of the others, or this is a little bit repetitive, or else there were long kind of dissertations about matters back home that readers might not be interested in. But he was quite a prolific letter writer. Not only did he write her these long, poignant, and often very beautiful letters, but he apparently had, I don't know, maybe 50 different people he corresponded with, including his mother up in Moreland and north of Russell. She had three sons in the war, all of them in Europe. One of them became a prisoner of war. And she apparently was quite depressed. And so he wrote her probably weekly from his descriptions to Letty. To try to keep her perked up, and all of his letters, I suspect, were like the letters to her, quite cheerful, except for some stages in the latter stages of the war when he seems to be kind of depressed himself. But generally his letters are kind of upbeat, which is quite amazing under such trying conditions as he was under during the, particularly once he reached the front in Europe.
And that is exactly what I found interesting, that it must have required some determination for Leland to write these letters when he was going through almost hell. And he's not just writing, he's also maintaining a sense of calm in his letters, which is remarkable.
Yes, and I think that's part of that is just Leland. If you knew Leland Duvall, calm was the one word you would use to describe him. He was... In the newspaper business, it gets quite frantic, deadlines every day. Leland was never frantic. The rest of us would all be panicky, but not Leland. He was always unflappable, and never excited, and always upbeat. And I think part of it also was that he did not want Letty or his mother or others to worry about him. And he obviously takes great pains to reassure them that things are going very well over here, and as if he's really kind of having a pretty good time of it. And then later you find out what he was enduring. And he actually also reassures from time to time, no, don't worry, I'm not going to be try to be a hero. There are no heroes in this war, just people who are lucky and people who are unlucky. And I'm not going to make any effort to be a hero. You can be sure of that. So I'm not going to be any real danger. And, of course, when I found his separation papers, I discovered that he had been awarded 5 Bronze Stars for bravery. So he indeed was in a great deal of trouble quite often during the 1944 and 1945. That was just part of Leland. He never wanted anybody to be worried.
So, as an editor, what do you primarily view this book as? It's a diary, a memoir, an expression of personal feelings, a description of the war, a travelogue, because there's a lot that goes on in this book.
Well, there is. It's several levels, as you say. One, it's sort of a memoir of the war. From one person's standpoint, I think also it has some historical value, both nationally and in Arkansas. There's a lot of you know, some Arkansas history in it as well. I think it has considerable literary value, particularly when you consider that this fellow was 31 years old when he gets his draft notice, and he had an eighth grade education, and could not have been a very strong education at that. It was eighth grade at a community called Moreland, which only had eight grades. You couldn't go to high school there. They had no high school. And the years were always very short because it was he was farm family, and so they had to work on the farm. So he had an eighth grade education, but he was self-taught. And until the war, he was basically an itinerant farm worker. That's all he did. He worked behind a mule and a plow. He was a strong-limbed fellow. And he worked in cotton gins in the Mississippi Delta and worked on farms behind a mule and a row binder, and followed the harvest and the planting out across the West Texas plains. And that's all he did until the war. And yet he was able to write so beautifully and so elegantly and so knowledgeably. He will be, say, in a pup tent someplace in Belgium, and it's cold and snowing, and he will begin to describe that, and it will remind him of a poem, and he starts reciting, obviously from memory, some poem, and I would look it up, and it would be a Shakespearean sonnet, and I would read the sonnet, and he would have it verbatim, except maybe for an article or two would be changed, but it's really quite remarkable from that standpoint. But as you say, it's a kind of a travelogue, both in the United States, some beautiful descriptions of the Mojave Desert and Southern California, and the train rides across California and across the Sierra Nevadas and across the country to Tennessee, and then up into New York to Lake Placid, and down to New York City, and then to England, and then across France. So it's a beautiful travelogue as well. So it's a distinctive book on several levels.
Now, as an editor, did you ever think about the point that this might be one of the last such compilations of letters because nobody writes them anymore?
Well, that's true. Nobody writes letters. Everybody is texting or doing email now, and nobody takes great care in when they write emails, and they're usually killed out as well, so that we may not see anything like this again. And letter writing used to be a great art, and some of the great literature were letters back and forth between lovers, between friends and family members and so forth. But we may not see that again. This may be the last of those, unless further books or other troves of correspondence are discovered from that era.
Do you have a favorite letter that Leland wrote to Letty?
I probably five or six, I guess, letters that I guess toward the end of the war that are I think very poignant. Did you want me to read one or something?
Yes, if
well,
you could.
Well, let me see if I could. I got the book here, but I don't have anything pages marked. I can read you one or two that kind of gives you the humor, mm-hmm. And also, I guess, kind of the pathos of the letter. Let's see here. All right, this is very close to the end. The war in Europe is over. They're waiting in Germany to see whether he's going to ship out to Japan. And then shortly after that, they drop the bombs, and the war is over completely. And this is a letter written, this is part of a letter written from Heldra, Germany on August 13th, 1945. And again, this is kind of the last half of the letter. My dearest Letty, logically, in the long months we have been apart, we should have learned the knack of letting well enough alone, but I have never learned. Always when I go to bed, there is the same mischievous face, the same impish grin etched in the blackness of the ceiling. Always there is you. I cannot dismiss the face, nor do I want to. It says, take things easy, Junior. Sometimes it says toots, but it always means the same thing. There's really no need to be serious about all this that you see. The world is a place to laugh in and a thing to laugh at. There is war and suffering, like it says in the papers, but that is only a small part of the picture. There is the mountain where the wind is clean and sharp, and where the leaves play a soft symphony in the evening. There are quiet lakes where the grass has been nipped short by the grazing cattle so that it makes a carpet of green velvet. There are white birches for the shade, and thrushes and catbirds for the orchestra. Not all the world is tired and hungry and looking for some place to spend the night under a shed before moving out on a road that leads into the unknown. There is still the hometown, the face says to me, where you meet people who will call you by your first name and who really mean it when they shake hands with you. This is the part of the world that you grew up in. This is the kind of life that you learned to like, and it is the kind that you're going back to. I am marking a little corner of it reserved, and that is for us. I hold the other end of the rope that keeps you from drifting into the belief that all the people of the world are sordid, drifting herd of animals who have not made any progress in the thing we like to call civilization. All this, the face, that is, your face, says to me. Not in so many words, of course, for you would never be so verbose as all that. But you say it in the way you smile, and the way the smile makes me remember that it is all this is true. Love always, Leland. There are several letters like that about what she means to him, and that's particularly the last year and a half of the war. There are a lot of letters in which he kind of invokes her as kind of saving him. He's able to survive because of his expectations of a life with her afterward.